New Orleans Pelicans time for the Dunktown Basketball Podcast Season Outlook Series. We're going to be joined today by ESPN's Justin Verrier, who I actually just saw in person in New Orleans about a week ago at the preseason game between the Pacers and the Pelicans. The Pelicans made a bunch of moves this year, but still are dogged by the usual health questions. What is kind of the feeling around the team really starting off camp here in terms of what their prospects are this year?
You know, oddly enough, I think it's pretty positive in the early goings. I think given, I guess it couldn't get much worse than last year is probably the best way of saying that. Things got pretty dour. I got down here by around February, and by that point, I mean, Norris Cole was starting. Luke Babbitt, by the end of the season, was taking over the offense. And so I think things got pretty bad toward the end of that season. But they made a lot of moves this offseason that made a lot of sense. Guys that fit Elvin Gentry's system a little bit better. And I think things just kind of fit really well right now, not only in terms of just how these guys fit into the system, but just maybe from a personality standpoint. I don't know if it's a talking point in just kind of preseason and just the general optimism people have going into a season, but it seems like all these guys get along, and they're spending a lot of time together, and at this point things are looking pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely a different vibe around the team, it seems like. Let's start with the health issue, though. I mean, normally I like to talk about how teams did last year as a baseline. I'm not sure that that's that useful considering how many replacement level guys they had, what all the injuries were, all the new guys that they brought in. Let's start with Anthony Davis. He had that debridement on his knee, also had a shoulder issue that he did not have surgery on. I had you on like shortly after you got down there to talk about all those injuries at the time and kind of the training staff and other issues. But what's AD's health status how's he looking in the early going here?
Yeah, he says everything is fine as of now. The way the team kind of approached it this preseason at media day and kind of setting the bar for him, they say it's more of kind of being a conservative sort of thing in the early going here, limiting his minutes in the first few preseason games and then ramping him up to kind of more of the standard 35-ish toward the last two games coming up here. But he seems like he's moving well. He hasn't particularly played well over the first three preseason games. A lot of shots I've noticed coming kind of away from the basket in that second game, in that Pacers game that you were there for. Really struggled around the basket. But other than that, I mean, I really haven't seen much from him that would indicate that he's not the same guy here moving forward. He looks a little bigger and that's always a source of interest with him, considering just his body and his development into kind of more of a true big man, considering what he started with as a high school guard. He's actually a foot taller according to him, so I don't know how much you could read into that, but so I guess all things considered, he's looking pretty good here.
Yeah, I was encouraged by the fact that he wouldn't really have much in the way of restrictions when camp started. I will say I was actually a little bit discouraged seeing him in person that night because he was struggling around the rim. I mean, there was one play that was really notable to me where he got thrown an alley-oop and just was not able to get up for it. Now part of that could be conditioning as well. When you're tired, you're not going to jump as high. And then he did come out in that third quarter, I think, a little bit pissed off with the way he had played in the first game or the first half, and did a little bit better, blocked some shots, but did not look. And the weight gain, you can spin that one of two ways, right? If he can play more center, if he can handle that pounding more, that's good. On the other hand, he does have somewhat of a skinny body type, and he's suffered from some lower body injuries. So maybe you would say he shouldn't gain too much weight. I mean, do you just your kind of ballpark impression? We won't hold you to this. Are you expecting him to be the same guy this year based on just kind of what your feeling has been so far?
Yeah, I was like you after that Pacers game, but I've seen the three games from him thus far, and there haven't been too many red flags. It's nothing consistent I've seen with him that would really cause concern. I think anytime a guy like him goes through that sort of surgery he went through, it's the first of his career, and I think even he was saying over the offseason as he was kind of in recovery, it kind of scared him a little bit just because it's the first time he's going through that situation. But there's nothing that I really noticed. And if anything, like it seems like he's had more of an upbeat kind of approach to things. He seems to be a little bit more mature as a result of things. One thing everyone will tell you around the team is that he's being a lot more vocal as a leader, I think in large part because maybe he starts to realize that if things are going to turn around down here, that he's probably the guy who's going to do it because they don't really have much of a second or third guy to kind of really help him out here.
Yeah, there's really, that occurred to me. There really aren't any like vets like the on this team that you would look at as like, all right, kind of old heads that you can go to for wisdom, so to speak.
Yeah, it used to be Kendrick Perkins last year, who everyone says is such a great teammate, but at the end of the day, I don't know you want him being that guy. But the stat we always toss around down here is that until this season, Anthony Davis was the youngest guy on their team for each of his first four seasons. And now you have a guy like Cheick Diallo, who just turned 20, who's going to be younger. But even Buddy Hield, I think probably their second youngest guy now, he's pretty much the same age as AD. I think he's going
to
turn 20.
That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. We always talk about how well Buddy is doing, and I make sure to bring that up. But I guess it helps, and it kind of goes along with what they were thinking of, theoretically, him being readier, in air quotes, this season.
So that's AD. We also have the situation with Drew Holiday. His wife, Lauren, did successfully give birth, but she has this benign brain tumor. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of these summaries. But and so it seemed like she's going to be having that surgery maybe in about like 5 or 6 weeks or so. Is that what the timetable that was released was?
Yeah, AD kind of let it slip during media day, which was about 2 weeks ago, that she had just had the baby. And I believe the plan was from there 5 to 6 weeks. So we're probably kind of somewhere in the middle of that right now.
Yeah, I mean, and Alvin and the Pelicans, to their credit, of course, have said that he can take all the time that he needs. But it really would be hard for me to imagine, given that even if everything goes well and you know, God forbid something, there are further complications. But even if things go well, it's hard to imagine Drew getting back earlier than maybe like 6 weeks into the season. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, it's a tough one to talk about because it's such a moving target here. On the one hand, you don't want to kind of speculate how this is going to go. But even though I think people will tell you it is a kind of a, it's routine, I guess would probably be the best way to say it, brain surgery, but it's routine in the end of that phrase is brain surgery, so nothing is really kind of a given there. I think you're always kind of maybe worrying about things that could ultimately go wrong, and so it's really tough to pin down when, but that seems to be kind of a fair assumption there.
Yeah, so Holiday, I mean, he at least was able to make it through last year healthy, which was one of the few bright spots from a health standpoint. Two players who were not able to make it through, Tyreke Evans and Quincy Pondexter. Where are those guys at this point?
Yeah, those are the two guys I think we're going to be a little bit more worried about here. With Quincy, we're going on a year plus now since he's really been back on the court doing what he's been able to do for this team in that kind of half year in the playoff year. It's funny, during media day, one of the reporters asked Del Demps, you know, is this a situation kind of like a Brandon Roy type of thing where we might not see Quincy again? And though Demps shot it down, I think it's kind of telling that a question like that isn't kind of ridiculous. I know Quincy has really been kind of working his butt off in order to get back. You know, he seemed really frustrated, saying at one point that, you know, I wish people knew how tough I was really working in order to get back out there. And I think it's really kind of painting him that he's not. The one bright side, I think, would be the way he described it was there was no setback with him. It's just a situation where they gave him sort of a general idea of when he could be back. And he obviously pinpointed the earliest date of that. And it turns out they're probably going to be a little bit more toward the end of that range. And so you're looking at kind of maybe November, December for him. And the same thing with Tyreke Evans, who, you know, it's kind of a weird situation where, again, you're looking at three surgeries on the same knee within 9 months. And then it, you know, when we get to talk to him at media day, it turns out he even had a small little blood clot issue post surgery in that third procedure. And though he kind of dismissed that kind of lingering or having any negative effects going forward, you know, it's just another thing in the long run of things. And I talked to Dwayne Brooks, their trainer, for a story I did toward the end of last season, and it seems like these have been kind of recurring issues for him. That even though he never had surgery, you know, there was trace fusion left on that knee, and so there were signs that there had been problems in the past. So you wonder if that might linger in to this season, even if he does kind of make it back here in that same kind of November, December range.
Yeah, for my purposes, I think when projecting these guys, I'm just going to assume that they're not going to have Coupon or Evans all year, and that if they do come back, that they're, you know, not really going to be impact players. And if they come back, that's great. It's gravy, I think, is actually how Gentry described it on a podcast with Zach Lowe. Sure. But I mean, I think that's how I'm seeing it. Are you getting the same impression?
Yeah. And the one thing they say all the time now is that they made all these moves in the offseason in order to kind of go ahead with that thinking, with, you know, Tyreek being icing on the cake or whatever it was. Although I will say, you know, as we go along in this preseason here, you do wonder if the wing, even though they went out and got Solomon Hill, if that's still not a concern for them, especially if they want to play more AD at center or more small ball, whatever it is. I think they're still a little bit thin there, which is why you see them going out and getting a Lance Stevenson, another guy you could kind of plug in there and put another ball mover in that situation.
So is that all of them? Have we done the full injury rundown? Are we good now?
Those are the major ones. There's still some cropping up here as preseason goes along, but I guess for now those are just blips.
All right, so let's talk about some of the additions that they made. Solomon Hill, 4 years, $48 million, maybe a little bit more with options. Where is he going to fit in here? Is he going to start at the three?
Yeah, I think that's the assumption here. I also just don't know who else they would start at the three at this point. I think if Quincy was back and healthy and able to give them something, I think he would make a lot of sense there, especially if they wanted to go a little bit smaller and move Hill down to the four in some sets. You have Quincy like right there to slide in there. But you know, I think you're going to get from Hill not necessarily what you got from him in the playoffs after that kind of breakthrough postseason he had playing a little four for the Indiana Pacers, shooting the corner three and providing some lockdown defense. They've kind of set the bar somewhere around being their lead defender, kind of being their identity on the defensive end, and then providing any sense of offense that he can kind of give them. I think he's a really smart player. I think he's a good ball mover, the type of guy you want in there if you can kind of cover him on offense. And then I think he's going to take really good shots. He's not going to hurt you on offense, I think is the best way to put it. And then you're just hoping that he gives you so much on the defensive end that, you know, he's fine in there. Although I think the problem you have going forward, especially with Drew out, is like how many of those guys can you play, those one-dimensional guys, when they went into this offseason saying that we need two-way guys, especially in light of last season when they were stuck playing Alonzo G, Dante Cunningham, and those types, where they really couldn't put together a complete team.
He's got a little more offensive game, I think, than those guys. He actually can do some stuff with the ball in his hands. I just think he's so much more effective at the four, and that was the position that he thrived in last year in the playoffs for the Pacers. And I kind of cringed when they said, oh, we're going to sign him to play three, because I liked that signing. And then I realized, oh, wait, they don't have anyone else who can even begin to plausibly guard the three, unless it's, you know, kind of the one way guys you talked about, like Cunningham or G, unless Pondexter were to come back, unless maybe Evans were to come back. And even he is not quite wing size. So, yeah, you make a good point there that he's basically the only traditionally sized wing that's on this roster that's even like close to being any good.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to come down to who he ends up playing with. I mean, I really love maybe a small ball option with Drew, Etuan Moore, Buddy Hield, him, Terrence Jones, and AD. I think that gives you a lot of options, and maybe, you know, you don't put a lot of pressure on Solomon Hill to do much on the offensive end and just kind of let him wreak havoc on the defensive end, let him be that guy. But, you know, I think it limits your options when you don't have a Drew in there, and you kind of have to paper that over, and you're looking at maybe a starting lineup where it's now Tim Frazier instead of Drew, and you're looking at Omar Asik starting again next to AD.
And Hield probably not, because all right, you're gonna say, hey, Hill is our best defender, we want to play him at the four, but now are you gonna have him guard the LeBron James, the Carmelo Anthony's, the Kevin Durant's of the world? Well, if you're gonna do that, then somebody has to guard the other team's four, or at least a combo forward size guy, depending on what the alignment is. And now you're leaving Buddy Hield or Etuan Moore to do that. That's probably not gonna work either. So it is kind of tough, and I don't think that Hill, as you mentioned, is quite a good enough offensive player to really be as good as it needs to be for a starting three. I thought that his shot has looked good when he's been taking him, but he's never going to be, you know, it takes a set shot, takes a while to get it off. So I don't know that he's going to be that high volume type of guy for this team. And the more we talk about this, I'm feeling worse and worse about having picked their over on the over under podcast. I may make an official change to that before the season starts. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, after all of what we just talked about, I'm a little bit more encouraged than I thought I'd be at this point. It's kind of been a roller coaster for me in terms of just pegging where these guys are at. And I mean, it's preseason. Who knows where any team is going to be for the most part, especially in this West, where it seems like after the first four or five teams that you know for sure, everyone has some sort of flaw that could send their season one way or another. I really liked what they did in the offseason, but then after Drew goes down, you look at what they have there, and it's like, what actually do they have outside of Drew? And when you build your entire offseason around the fact that Drew and AD played so well together, to lose a guy like him for any stretch of time, especially given in this early part of the season where the schedule is a little bit brutal. I mean, within the first three games, I think they have a back-to-back with Golden State at home, and then they go to San Antonio. And you worry that you're looking at a season like last year where they got into a hole early and they really...
0-11 to start the year last year.
Yeah, can't get any worse than that. So there's the upshot. But, you know, I think one of the issues last year was AD looked around at what he had and looked at all the losses. And I think one of the criticisms of him was that he maybe didn't try enough on mostly the defensive end. And the way I've heard it is just, you know, can you blame him? When he looked around, he didn't have much to really play for. And he's the type of guy who I think is a little bit more passive by nature. And he didn't have those type of guys like a Quincy. And I know him and Tyreek are tight. And so he didn't have someone to galvanize him to really bring him up to the point where he can really get going, which is why I think you've seen such a change in his kind of mood and approach this season, just because he realizes that that can't happen again if they want any shot.
Yeah, let's talk about either the new guys or the holders. Who do you see as players who can potentially get better this year?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of room. I mean, Buddy would probably be the easy target for getting better there. I'm not really sure what you're going to end up getting from him, but I've really liked how mature his game is over these past three preseason games.
I think he's going to have to play, because they just don't have anybody else who can shoot. And if you're playing Hill at the three, you just have, and Tim Frazier is not really a guy who can shoot when Holiday is out. Like, I think they, regardless of how bad he is on defense, teams are at least going to guard him at the 3-point line. I think he just is going to have to play.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he does have that one skill that I think has translated already. And that's just that quick release, his ability to knock down threes. Obviously struggled in summer league big time. Though maybe starting to see why all the coaching staff was saying, you know, if you get him around some guys and at the NBA level and he's just there to knock down off of kickouts, you know, he's gonna have a much easier time. So yeah, like you're saying, if he is thrust into that situation, I think he's gonna at the very least, he has something he can kind of lean back on while that other stuff comes along.
How have they been using him in preseason? What are your impressions so far?
I've been surprised at how much they've been using him to handle the ball a little bit, especially after the summer league, where they kind of had him initiating some offense, and any like sort of ball pressure that he got, he just kind of seemed flustered, and his dribble wasn't to the point where he can kind of get out of it and make things happen. But you know, you've seen a little bit here in the early goings. Maybe it's because of lack of options, maybe it's just kind of trying things out, but he ran a little bit of pick and roll, and I can think of at least two times where he got Omer two looks at the rim that Omer finished, which is like no easy task. And I don't mean to make light of Omer, but I was significantly impressed with that. And you also see the way he's such a willing ball mover, and he tries so hard on the defensive end. I mean, that's his big MO, that he's just going to try regardless. And I think that's really encouraging. Let's say he only shoots threes and tries really hard on both ends. I think that's not the worst thing you can get out of a rookie.
Yeah, he had a reputation of not being a good defender. I don't think he's ever going to get into you or be a guy that you want guarding the other team's best wing threat, but he's been fine to me so far. It hasn't really stuck out. I think he's been experienced enough. He's not, I haven't seen him make a bunch of dumb mistakes or just not try. So I agree with that. I mean, I think with him handling the ball, they have used him some. That game that I was at in New Orleans, he, I think, had like 17 or 18 points, and he's never going to get all the way to the rim, but he can at least, you know, especially with the clock winding down, get into the mid range, throw something up, a floater. He's got pretty good touch, you know, create a shot. Okay. I think, I mean, and so again, I think it's more with the guys he's going to be playing with. I mean, it looks like Tim Frazier is probably going to start. You got Galloway and Moore, who are okay shooters, but not guys you really have to respect. Hill, and then you got AD and then Oshik in that starting lineup. I think, especially when they go with the starters, that he's going to have to start and he's going to have to play enough, because otherwise they're not going to be able to score and not going to be able to space the floor.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think creation is going to be a big problem here. I think they have a lot of guys who are willing ball movers, guys who are going to try to find, you know, the open shot, guys who are going to play, quote unquote, the right way and the way Alvin wants to. But I think outside of Anthony Davis, I don't really know where there's going to be a consistent source of offense. I think they're just so confident in the way the system runs and the success kind of fringe guys like a Tim Frazier last year have had in Elvin Gentry's system, that it's not going to be much of an issue. But so far, you've seen really Etuan Moore has been the second guy there putting up points. And a lot of it has been coming off of just kickouts. And he's just been burying a lot of threes from mostly just the left corner. And I think you can get enough of that. But I do wonder, you know, if you need creation, if you need offense outside of Davis, you know, taking 30 shots a game, I don't know who that guy is at this point.
Yeah, they've traditionally have been pretty good offensively these last couple of years when Davis is on the floor. He's a good enough pick and pop guy that you can use that approach now. I also was encouraged that with how hard he was trying to post up and get deep position in that game that I saw. I think that that's something that they can look at, especially when they get the switch. And if they get it early in the shot clock, they're going to need to run too. They're going to be really dependent on that, especially without Holiday, just due to the lack of half court creators. And I think AD can get a lot better, especially defensively with what you were talking about. Terrence Jones can't possibly be as bad as he was last year, right?
I don't think so, though he's one of those guys who sat out the last game. So we'll see if he ends up in the injury list. But yeah, I think that's the guy right there. I think if Terrence Jones plays like he did 2 years ago, I think you're looking at a team that could threaten for a playoff spot just because he fits in a lot of ways that this team needs a guy to fit. You know, even though Davis has talked a lot about, and they've talked a lot about using Davis at center, they use Ryan Anderson a lot of times to kind of take on that bigger guy on the defense, just because he has more of the bulk and kind of lower center of gravity to stand up to some of the pounding. And I think just the way he plays off of AD and just like how they kind of mask each other, ideally, I think that they're really nice fits, though you really don't know what you can get with Jones. And I think even after Jones had a really good first game, that Pacers game was not so great. And you have Alvin Gentry, even when Jones played well, basically saying, you know, let's see. And I think you see why, just because, you know, he's just not a sure thing at this point.
I don't think I've ever seen him actually make a three-pointer when I've been watching, which is odd because he shot like, you know, 34% or something 2 years ago in Houston. But a lot of those shots that he had to take, just the clock was running down and he was like 0 for 6 or something in that game from three. You think that Oshik could be better this year?
Yeah, I think so. And I think everyone's pointing to this last game, this most recent game in China where he had, I think he was 14 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks. You know, it's preseason. But the two big things that I've seen are he's moving a little bit better. You know, he'll admit that he did not play well on defense last year in a very kind of sad dog, endearing sort of way where he'll just say matter-of-factly, you know, I did not play well and defense is my thing and I didn't play well on defense. I think this year, he really made an effort to kind of come into camp in shape. And then he didn't have a back issue, which is the issue, that kind of dogged him at the start of last season. And then, I think the Pelicans will tell you it just kind of led to a bunch of other stuff that, complicated sort of how he played last year, which was, I mean, you look at all the stats from last year and it's crazy how bad they are.
Yeah, he's always going to suck on offense.
Right.
But I mean, he can at least get on the offensive glass. That was another thing that I thought they really suffered from with Gentry, who does not seem to emphasize the offensive glass. Like a big part of AD's statistical decline was that I think he went from like close to double digit offensive rebound rate to like 6% or something. And part of that maybe was shooting more threes. And part of it was the lack of effort. And part of it was coaching. It's hard to separate all of those out. But yeah, I think Oshik, he looked better in the game that I was at too, just physically. And if he can get back to actually being a pretty decent defensive center for 20, 25 minutes a night, and then you play AD at center the rest of the time, now I think you might be cooking with something defensively. That's what I expect to be a big strength. And I think, you know, going through the outline here, in terms of regression candidates, there isn't really anyone on this team that pops out, unless you want to talk maybe about Solomon Hill compared to like his playoff three-point shooting. But over the course of last year, I don't think there's anyone you look at as like, hey, this guy did something unsustainable last year.
Yeah, no, the only one that would jump out to me was just Moore's three-point shooting. I think he shot 45% from three last year, and I think he was like a career 35%. But, you know, if he settles into something around, you know, 40, 38, I think that sounds about right for him.
And he's looked good shooting it, as you mentioned, in the preseason. Maybe Tim Frazier as well. Tim Frazier had a 19 PER in only 16 games down the end of last year, and he's going to start. I mean, I think he's got some talent. I think he could, you know, sort of be the Ish Smith of this year, but, you know, probably not a starting quality point guard, but maybe enough to be a stopgap. We'll see. I think with him, it's just the question is always his shooting and whether teams can just go under on him on the pick and roll and can leave him when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. I think if he can do enough there, that he can be a solid player for these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's one of those guys that I think is really going to have a nice effect on AD. I think they have a really nice relationship, like on the court and off the court.
Yeah, everyone loves that guy. Like Dame Lillard and like CJ McCollum still love Tim Frazier for when he was in Portland.
Yeah, I kind of love him too. He's just like a... I don't know. He's kind of like a badass. Like, he has this snarl to him that's kind of Dame-esque. And it's kind of hard not to root for him because he is the smallest guy in the court. And yet, you know, his rebound rate for a guard of his side is not bad. And like, through the preseason, he's been on triple-double watch, I feel like, every game.
Yeah, he goes after on the defensive glass. I appreciate that about him. Even he'll even get the odd offensive rebound at times, too. So what are some of the, and we've hit on a few of them, but to the extent we haven't talked about them, what are some of the like playing time lineup issues that Coach Gentry is going to have to sort out this year?
I think every single thing is up for grabs at this point, to the point where Alvin, I don't know how much this is him just not wanting to commit to anything, but he pretty much said everyone outside of AD is up for grabs on the starting unit. Every spot is up for grabs. It really depends on, I think matchups are going to dictate a lot according to what he said. I also think it depends on, you know, what guys are going to be available. I think, you know, if Tim Frazier is your guy as the point guard, is it going to change what you want to do maybe in your front court? And so a lot still hasn't to be decided. I would expect AD and Hill to start, like for what we said. I don't know who you would start over Hill. I really like what Etuan Moore is giving them from a two-way guard. I think Frazier will probably end up starting, like you said, and then start maybe with Oshik just kind of as a base and then go from there. I do worry that even with Oshik playing well and shooting free throws, which is a big thing that we didn't mention before. I think he's close to 80%, I think, from free throws, and which is a huge upgrade considering I think he's more of like a 50-60% career shooter. I think you might worry about starting from behind like you did last year, even when they had some better players out there when Drew was relegated to that second unit to kind of buoy that one. And so you wonder going forward how much that's going to adjust things. You know, I think the hope is that they only have to get through a month without Drew or even less than that, and then he can kind of come and save the day, and then maybe they play closer to 500 ball, maybe above that.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned Langston Galloway yet either. He's a little bit more of a combo guard. Same thing with Etuan Moore. But yeah, I mean, Frazier started the game that I was at, and I think they probably do need a little bit more in terms of playmaking. So you feel like he has the inside track to start over Galloway at this point?
Yeah, just because I think he gives him a little bit more of a punch than what Galloway does. I really liked in that first game watching Galloway and Moore from the jump really get into the Mavericks guards on the defensive end. It was really jarring after watching some of those games late in last season, seeing two guards who are physical and really going after it. And I think that's going to be really important. And I think that they can play off each other a little bit, but I'm a little bit more comfortable, like you mentioned, with Tim Frazier as my primary ball handler, just because I think he has such good chemistry with AD, and I think he's going to be looking to get him involved more than anything else. And when you have a guy like that, and when you have the other options around him like they have, I think that should be your primary focus.
And so you think it'll be more starting at the two over Hield, at least early on?
I think so. That's going to be up for grabs again. I wouldn't say I'm certain about that, but Moore's played really, really well. I think he's their second leading scorer outside of AD, or he's definitely been their second most consistent and impressive one in this preseason. So I would personally definitely start him there.
Yeah, I mean, neither of those guys can get to the rim at all. Moore has an okay floater game, which I don't think he's had a chance to bust out, but for his career, he shoots it pretty well on floaters. And, you know, certainly I think more advanced than Hield on the defensive end at this point. What about when Drew comes back? I mean, they're actually going to have a ton of depth at the one and two. They'll have Drew, then they have Frazier and Galloway, all those guys at the one, then Hield and Moore as well. I mean, you really will have five pretty capable options. That's without even Tyreek being thrown in as well. Between the one and the two, who do you think will be the odd man out once Drew comes back?
Yeah, I do wonder if Galloway and Moore kind of overlap a little bit in terms of what they can offer.
I think so. I mean, I think they didn't realize they were going to be able to get Galloway, that the Knicks would pull his qualifying offer and that he would be as cheap as he was. I mean, I thought that was a good signing as a New Orleans native, but yeah, I agree that he's duplicative of Moore. But when you're the Pelicans, you get as much depth as you possibly can because you know people are getting injured.
Right, exactly. My big question with that kind of glut is how much Moore can maybe swing and spot some minutes at the three with Hill at the four there, especially if Terrence Jones doesn't really show that he's a consistent option in their front court. I think then you really don't have many other options if you want to go small, and so you're looking at Hill at the four spot. I don't think that's an ideal setup, but I think against the right units, I think you could probably pull that off, maybe a Drew, Galloway, Moore situation, just because I think you can switch a lot on defense too.
Yeah, I guess you could switch one through three there, and none of those guys are... Those guys are at least all going to compete if they get stuck on the other team's three, and you just hope that AD can do enough on the defensive glass. Hill, not an amazing defensive rebounder by my eyes. Yeah, so it will be interesting to see. I think you mentioned starting the other battle, I guess we can say, is between Ashik and Alexis Ajinsa, who we haven't talked about yet. How do you see that shaking out?
Yeah, pick your poison with that one, man. Yeah,
I would go with Ashik if I had to pick one there.
Yeah, I think I would too. It's funny because at media day, Alexi kind of out of nowhere in his last comment, pretty much was like, "Well, I'm gonna be the starter. You'll see." And then like basically, Mike drops us, and we're all looking at each other like, "What just happened there?" And then he comes out in the first preseason game, in the second preseason game, and he is the starter. And he did look good at times. Although, even though everyone says he's in the best condition and the best shape of his career since he's been there, you already saw playing at that pace. I don't know, man.
Well, he's now come down with back spasms, and also just not a guy, his body just, I mean, he's enormous when you see him in person, and you know, one of the longest wingspans that's ever been recorded in the NBA, but just kind of has like a little bit of a doughy body, like a little bit oddly shaped, you know, doesn't have great balance, struggles to do stuff on the move. I mean, he's an excellent standstill shooter, but asking him to do anything with the ball isn't that great. And then I think if Ashik is healthy, I think he's clearly a better player than Ajinsa, and it's just a question of whether Ashik can bring it on defense and be a guy who is, you know, a top 15, top 10 defensive center the way he had been at earlier points in his career. But you made a good point here, is that as much as they don't have Ryan Anderson on this team anymore to allow AD to play some center, and so you really, with the dearth of threes, you gotta kind of start big just to soak up some minutes there. Otherwise, you're just never going to get through the game, because Hill's going to have to rest at some point too. So you're really, you have to get something out of those centers.
Yeah, I think Ajinsa makes sense on paper more than he does in practice, just because he has a little bit of touch and a little bit of stretch through his game. So you can kind of provide a little bit more space than Ashik. But Ashik really has that, you know, bankable skill where, you know, regardless of what's going on with Ashik, whether how healthy he is or whatever, he's going to go out there and bash some heads and kind of create some space with his screens and really try to, you know, get on the boards, which, you know, I think is important with that team, especially if they're going to worry about spotting. I think when he's on the court and when you have a traditional center on the court, I think you're looking at providing Davis with some reprieve just from the banging or whatever you would get down in the blocks. And I think he really does that for you. And then, you know, the big question, as we mentioned earlier, is just how much is Davis going to end up playing center? And I do wonder, just based on what Davis is saying, what the organization has been saying since media day, if we're not going to look back in maybe 2-3 months from now and we'll say, oh, those are the things they were saying in order to set up Davis playing this position more full time. Just Davis is more of a leader. He's willing to do whatever's necessary. He grows an inch somehow, even though he was 6'10 and a half in shoes coming out of college, and now is 6'11, but apparently that's an inch. And just now Gentry saying, you know, we're going to be more open to not having a traditional center for every team. So yeah, it's going to be a big question. And really, I think it's kind of a season defining one, because what they do next to Davis has always been a big question in my mind. And I think it's still one that they really haven't settled. If Jones can be that guy, I think he makes a lot of sense. But like we said, it's still a big question.
Yeah, and he's going to kill your defense, because to me, this team, that's going to be how they're going to have to win games. Like, this needs to be a top 10 defense. And I think they have that level of talent. If AD and Asha can get back to where they were 2 years ago, Hill is a solid option on the wing. Moore, Galloway, Drew, Tim Frazier is okay. Heald, I think, can be okay. Dante Cunningham, for all his faults, is okay on the defensive end. And I think with all those guys, like, they have defensive talent, and they're just gonna have to say, all right, hopefully AD can just carry us enough on offense. Like, that's the recipe for success to me with these guys. I think they have pretty good depth other than at the three, and I think that they can defend, and that's why I felt more positively about them than some people did this year.
Yeah, it all makes sense, and what they're saying all makes sense, and how they're prioritizing, like you said, the defensive end first and foremost, to the point where whenever I ask an offensive question, everyone will kind of dismiss it and be like, you know, we will get points. We're a good offensive team. We have enough guys here who can score. It's all about the defense. And
yeah, I'm skeptical about that. With Drew in, I think that might actually be true. Without him, I think that they could be in trouble. But yeah, I think it's, yep. I mean, they were, what, 27th in defense by points per possession last year. So that would be quite a leap, even with the personnel changes, to get up to the top 10. But I think the talent is there to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what you're looking at here is, especially with Drew out to start the season, I think you're looking at a situation where they would probably, they're laying the tracks to be good, not this season, but next season. I think this year they're doing all the right things, and they made a lot of the right moves in order to get back on the right page after last season. Because even when healthy, I think that team had some issues on the defensive end with Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon in there. And if they did well, I wonder if they would have kind of hurt them in the long run, having to re-sign those guys and re-up them. It's a big question. Who knows? There's a lot of, revisionist history to go on there. But I do feel like this team makes a lot of sense for Alvin Gentry. I think it makes a lot of sense in today's NBA. And I think it really could flourish if they get the right pieces there. And they've almost set themselves up to the point where if they have another good offseason, you're looking at a team where this team could be right back where they were 2 years ago, where we're talking about Anthony Davis as an MVP candidate. And, you know, this team is kind of the next up and coming team. I do wonder who's going to be pulling the strings at that point in coaching. But I guess a lot of that will depend on this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's not looking like they're going to have a ton of space next year. Unfortunately, I have them at a projection of only about $7 million in room with Holiday's cap hold, and if they were to move on from Galloway, that might get them up to maybe about, you know, $12 million in room. Probably not enough to really have a huge impact. Maybe they could bring in another wing option, at least for some depth at that point, but that's also assuming that they move on from Evans as well. So what do you see as the big strengths of this team that they can rely on to try and win games? We mentioned the defense. Anything else that pops out to you?
Anthony Davis, I would say, is the big
shot blocking, maybe. Yeah, you could look at.
What was that?
I said shot blocking, maybe you could look at, in addition, if Ashik and Davis are back and actually playing some defense this year.
Yeah, I think they definitely have the potential to do that. I do really look forward to what they could do on the wing in terms of defense. Like you said, they got a lot of guys who can play with strength and kind of get up into guys. I mean, I do think that they'll shoot the ball a lot better from the corners, and I think they got a lot of guys who could spread the floor, so that could be a potential source of strength. But I mean, maybe I'm stretching here, but I just come down to everything with this team being Anthony Davis related in terms of anything good.
I would say their depth is much improved. I don't think, even with Holiday out, there's nobody, maybe you could say Cunningham or whoever's going to be the backup three, but I don't think there's anyone on this team you look at, and also it'll depend on whether Asha can come back and give him some competent play for 20 minutes a night, but I don't and Jones too, maybe, but they still have so much more depth than they had in previous years years when at least you're not going to be running, you know, two or three rotation spots per night out there at replacement level. And I think that's something that just absolutely killed them in these years when they've been bad the last few years. And so that's something that I would look at as well. And certainly the guard depth, and maybe they could even try to move someone like Moore or Galloway to a team that needs a little bit more depth. Even Tim Frazier that needs a backup point guard if he plays well to start the year and get a little bit more depth on the wing. That's something that could potentially happen because they do have just so many of those guys now.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the good things about their offseason was they made a lot of smart bets, but I think the downside of that is a lot of them are still kind of bets. You know, I think you know what you're getting from Hill and Moore, although I think there's still some fluctuation there. I think, you know, they paid for future potential. Those guys are still young and they showed enough last year that I think that, you know, they'll ultimately come out as good contracts. But, you know, there's a possibility that Moore maybe, you know, doesn't shoot as well from three. There's like a huge regression there. Or, you know, Solomon Hill just never puts it together on the offensive end. Maybe, you know, even the corner three, he struggles to hit. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's a possibility. And then, although they didn't really shell out much for Terrence Jones or Lance Stevenson or some of these other guys to fill out the roster, those were really good kind of high reward, low risk moves, but they kind of also need those to pan out for them in order to be good this season, which I think the team still has some hopes for being.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned Stevenson at all, actually, and he's on a non-guaranteed contract at the moment, but I think at least he provides someone who might be able to pretend to play three other than Cunningham. You think he's going to make the team?
If you were to ask me today, I would say yes, just based on how they're going about things in this preseason. You know, the one thing that we've all looked at here in New Orleans is just that how little Alonzo G is playing and how much Lance Stevenson is playing. Now, on the one hand, you know what you can get from Alonzo. He was one of their guys throughout the season who actually played and stayed healthy and was kind of one of the last guys healthy, last guy standing toward the end of last season. But Stevenson has played a lot and, you know, he gives them minutes at a position of need. Whereas I think with Alonzo, you could slot him in at the three behind Solomon Hill, but then you're automatically punting some offense. Whereas with Lance, you don't really have to do so just because he's a bit better with the ball. And although a little bit more high risk, high reward sort of situation, you know, he could do a little bit more, provide a little bit more stretch.
They just need someone who can do something off the dribble on the team. I thought that of all the teams that he could have signed with, New Orleans was a pretty good one, especially with Jrue. I mean, now Lance, I mean, basically can just create some shots for himself and maybe for others at times at kind of a below average efficiency. But I think especially when AD's out of the game, they're just going to need someone who can soak up possessions like that. And he does provide that. And he's okay on defense, just a horrendous shooter, obviously, still from behind the 3-point line that I don't think that's necessarily going to get any better. But yeah, I think, you know, if you're going to have him in as a backup three, and maybe even he's the guy who could enable them to play with Hill at the four and at least have someone with a big enough body to handle opposing wings at the three. So I think he's a pretty good fit. There's a reason though that he lasted for as long as he did, that nobody has really been interested in him these last couple of years though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what usually shakes me off of kind of my sense of optimism that I've been feeling about this team throughout most of the preseason, is that we're pretty much saying a guy who just got with the team, who has 100K guaranteed, is in line to play big minutes and be a big part of this team, even though he's not even assured a spot yet. And I think that's the complication going forward, is without Jrue, it really opens up a lot of questions that, you know, they have some options, but I don't know if they've actually found an answer yet.
What are some other weaknesses that that opposing coaches are going to be trying to exploit?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on, you know, what they're going to end up getting. You know, it's funny that even though they've had Davis, who has been one of the best shot blockers in the league since he's been in the NBA, led the league, I think, in per game shot, blocks per game twice in a row, you know, the rim protection hasn't been great there. I wonder how much that has to do with Davis's defense, Oshik's defense, kind of maybe Davis. I know one of the criticisms of him is that maybe he goes for the block too much instead of maybe playing the more sound defensive play. And I also wonder how much it's on just the wing defense kind of allowing guys to go free and have Davis try to clean things up. I think when Drew's out there, he definitely provides a sense of stability, but, you know, Eric Gordon at the nail wasn't necessarily the biggest deterrent from stopping streaking guys toward the rim there. So I think in my mind, that's kind of their biggest one. And then transition defense. I mean, after every game this preseason, Alvin Gentry's harped on their transition defense, just because if you're going to play at that pace, I think you need to get back, and you've seen them kind of get scored on there a little bit.
Yeah, that's when I look at. And then I think just the shooting, the spacing, especially without Drew. I mean, Hill, as well as he shot it last year, is, you know, he shot like 25% on threes or something last year overall. And not, he's certainly well below average at the three position as a 3-point shooter. AD can shoot threes, but probably not someone that you want hanging out there too much. Oshik can't make a shot longer than the end of his nose. And Frazier, not a guy who really shoots it very well either. Galloway and Moore are okay, but, you know, nobody other than Hield that you really look at is like, all right, we got to respect this guy at the 3-point line. And then, you know, if you're forced to play someone like G or Stevenson, that's going to be a problem. And then just the creation off the dribble as well is another thing that you look at. I think these guys are just going to be facing a lot of packed paints, and that they're just going to have to win games with their defense or with AD shooting a lot of mid-rangers, or posting up as well and trying to create double teams, which maybe with him being a little stronger, he might get better at. All right, what do you think is the best case scenario for these guys? Drew comes back in relatively short order. Everyone stays as healthy as you could hope, and you know, guys don't regress from the 3-point line. What do you see as the best case for these guys?
Yeah, I think the best case would be while Drew is away, they kind of establish themselves as kind of a scrappy team that's going to maybe steal some wins you wouldn't really expect them to. Maybe like on that back-to-back to kind of start the season, they win maybe one of those games and, you know, they keep their head above water. It doesn't get into a situation where it's 1-11 and you're looking at such a hole that it's just almost impossible to come out of. And then once Drew gets back, they play a lot better and then maybe kind of push it around 500, be in that range, and just kind of hope that the rest of the West, you know, some of the teams have that injury, you know, just not the same luck that they've had in the past, whereas maybe things work out for the Pelicans where finally they stay healthy and maybe they're sneaking into the end of the playoffs, whereas last year, you know, it worked out the opposite way.
Yeah, what do you see as like a ceiling for these guys from a regular season win standpoint? You think
it's so funny.
45 is kind of what I was looking at, maybe.
Yeah, absolute like ceiling for them. Just because, I mean, Davis, I mean, if he's on and he's playing as well as he did 2 years ago, I mean, it just changes things so much. And so I it's really hard for me to count out when I look at just how good he was 2 years ago and how things, you know, obviously wasn't as good last season, definitely less efficient. Though I wonder how much that is, as you mentioned, you know, some coaching, some, you know, taking away from the rim and away from offensive rebounds, and how much it was just, you know, effort on the defensive end, which he can correct by just, you know, making sure he's engaged the whole time. And then the missed games is obviously the one we haven't talked about, but that's the huge one. But, you know, if he's playing in 75 games at the same sort of level that he was last season, I wonder if that doesn't mean a few more wins.
Yeah, you think about it, they won 30 last year and their point differential was that of a 31 win team, and they had the absolute season from hell last year. They're 27th in a defense and 18th in offense, and they had a bunch of guys injured, and AD missed the last 20 games or so of the season, and you know, Drew couldn't, it was on a minutes limit, and Tyreek didn't play the whole season, and Pondexter didn't play. I mean, they had three or four replacement level guys in the rotation probably on average throughout the season, and they still managed to get to 31. So I think at least they're going to have guys who are somewhat competent this year, and if AD can get back to being where he was 2 years ago, yeah, I think you can get to 35 wins. Maybe they're, you know, this team could be like, and Oshik too, maybe this team could be like the fifth best defense in the league. Like, I think that's actually possible. And maybe they get just a ride the back of AD and they get to 15th in offense. Like, I think, you know, high 40s might even be possible, but I'm going to say there's a pretty low possibility of that, both due to the health record of the team and the players involved, and a lot of guys who are not, you know, kind of going to be moving into larger roles like Moore and Hill that you're relying on. So to take a step forward there. So I don't find that as particularly likely, but I do think they could be, you know, even get up to maybe being like the sixth seed or the fifth seed in like the unlikely scenario that everything goes as well as it could.
Yeah, I mean, you're just like me now, because you look at this team long enough and you see everything fitting around AD and you think to yourself, like, yeah, if this goes right, this goes right, I could see it, you know, and I could see it out there on the court at sometimes. And the biggest thing is they have Anthony Davis. They have one of the best 5 to 10 guys in the league who's coming into his prime, and he still doesn't make a full max and provides them a little bit more room. Like, what more can you ask for from a focal point? And that's the type of guy who can really just, you know, some of these other teams that are competing for the same spot, they just don't have. And so if AD is that guy, if he's able to kind of paper over some of the things that they might not have, I think they're in really good position going forward. Because like I said, I think they got a lot of good guys in there that if they maybe just get a third guy next to Drew, if they maintain Drew going into next offseason, I think it's possible. They don't have the flexibility, but maybe Terrence Moore plays well enough that they find a way to bring him back at a reasonable price. So
Terrence Jones, you mean? Yeah, or Etuan Moore too. one of the two of those guys. Yeah, it's you know what, this is an aside, and listeners, forgive me if I've said this on the show before. I can't remember what I said it in private conversations or on the show, but it's amazing, you know, you have all these guys in the Warriors and all these guys in the Cavs, and then it's amazing how few of the other like top 10 or 15 best NBA players are playing on these teams that have like no one else in like the top 40 on their team with them. Like AD, Harden, Cousins, Russell Westbrook now, like all of these guys who are really good are on teams that have like nobody else on them. I think like that's as big of a problem for kind of the lack of drama that people are expecting this season as just everyone teaming up on the Warriors is.
Yeah, absolutely. And while it does create that kind of disparity where between kind of the have-nots, I think it does make probably, you know, from just like a league-wide storyline, it does make for some interesting cases, not only just at the team level where you wonder, you know, you look at the organizations and say you were granted, you know, one of the best players in the league, how have you really built around him? But, you know, maybe it creates kind of an interesting dynamic where you have sort of a David and Goliath going up against a team like the Warriors. I mean, I could already picture if things are going well for the Pelicans and they get that eighth seed and they're playing the Warriors, you're set up in a situation kind of similar to 2 years ago where it's AD versus the super team, and it creates, you know, good basketball and potentially a nice little story.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about too is the Hield pick. I was critical of that pick. I felt like they should have taken Jamal Murray. I think Hield will probably help more this year than Murray will, but I felt like my number one quest would have been, as their management, you have to find a way to get a second star with AD, and cap space is probably not going to make that happen. You had this terrible season last year. You got to draft six, even though you weren't that bad. Just, you got to swing for the fences with, you know, the potential best offensive player that you can find. And I felt like that was Murray. What do you think of that opinion? Like, what's your reaction to those thoughts?
Yeah, I think the team would tell you that regardless of age, they thought that Hield was the better player. And I think I'm more in line with you here. And maybe that's because I was probably listening to the podcast too much and you...
There is no such thing. There's no such thing as that.
But I felt the same way, just because if the goal here is to tread water until they can kind of break through to always go for the playoffs and not go into full on rebuild mode, when are they ever going to get the chance to hit a home run ever again? Because they're not a place where free agents are really dying to come to. They don't have the history of drawing guys, one, and they don't have the history of success in order to do that. So I don't really see that as a true option at this point. And you look at the way the league is set up and the way and how valuable rookie contracts are going forward with the cap rising over the this past offseason and the next one. This was the time for them to really play for that, and I was really hoping they would end up getting a guy like Dragan Bender. Obviously, he didn't fall to them, so it didn't end up being a question. But I probably would have been going for Murray there, just for, like you said, it probably sets them up long term a little bit better. He's a much better prospect. I think he's, you know, 3 years at least younger than Buddy Hield. But you know, I guess we'll see here. And Hield's played a little bit better, but like, I don't think he has the ceiling of a Murray.
Yeah, I just, it's very hard for me to concoct a scenario scenario in which he, you know, I think your best case scenario for Buddy is like JJ Redick's career, you know, maybe, although Redick barely played his first couple of years, but just becoming what Redick is now. And that's a very, very valuable player. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think someone like that moves the needle to get these guys into championship contention. But it sounds like what you're saying is they didn't necessarily disagree with that line of thinking of going for the highest upside guy. They just felt like Buddy was the highest upside guy.
Yeah, I think they just like Buddy. I don't know like how much of that is just based on their worldview. I mean, Dell Demps has the history of going after guys who are older, who are going to help you right away. And I don't know how much that's, you know, just his personal perspective or how much, you know, that's just coming from above, that there's sort of, an impetus to win now, to not really go a full-on rebuild mode, which they really haven't done since New Orleans took over.
Can we talk about this too? There was like the end of the season, there was sort of this pregnant pause for like 14 days where no one knew what was going on. Maybe I think there was some speculation that it was just because of the draft and like the NFL draft, and like Mickey Loomis was concentrating on that. But it seemed like at one point that Demps, that they might actually move on from Demps. And then 2 weeks later, didn't they just like have a press conference and it was all just like business as usual? I can't remember the exact details, but I'm sure they're closer to the front of your mind.
Yeah. So what happened was I was already in Charlotte covering the Hornets Heat playoff series, and they called a press conference for Dell Demps in order to have kind of a season wrap up. They didn't have one immediately after the season. We only got Alvin Gentry. And then I believe 24 hours later, or maybe not even 24 hours, they canceled that press conference. And it sent everybody into speculation mode about what was going on there. The Advocate, the New Orleans Advocate, did some really good reporting on this during that time. And based on what they reported and what I've heard, it pretty much suggested that Dell wasn't assured a spot back. Although everyone was operating under the assumption that he was coming back, there wasn't that 100% guarantee that everyone would be coming back. And I mean, there were guys on vacation. There were guys kind of preparing for the draft here. And so one small part of that was that above Dell is Mickey Loomis, the Saints GM, and Dennis Lauscha, the president, who's also the president for the Saints. The draft for the NFL was going on. And while I think they did want to take more time to evaluate Dell, I think small part of it was they just could not devote the time and resources to do so while they dealt with the Saints, which, I mean, it's kind of how things have gone here over the past few years. I think the organization would...
And they're not doing a great job with the Saints either, by the way, it seems.
Oh, yeah.
The league leaders in dead money every year. I'm not a football analyst, but it definitely, you don't get the impression that they're exactly like a ton of long-term thinking with the Saints either, necessarily.
Yeah, and it's funny because while this preseason was going on, Ed Warder, who I think has had some ties into the Saints, has done some really good Saints reporting in the past. He was just fielding Twitter questions and was asked, like, you know, are the Saints guys out? Is upper management out? And he said something to the effect of Tom Benson thinks Mickey, like installing Mickey Loomis as GM, was one of his best decisions ever. So there's no chance of him getting fired. So you look at that type of job security and you start to wonder, you know, what is it even going to take to get fired? Dell has been through, I guess, three ownership changes now, and he's still going, if you consider George Shin, the NBA, and now the Bensons. And now 5 years into that Benson reign, he's still here. There's definitely some questions that arose as a result of it, but they're going forward with Dell and Alvin, at least for this season.
Yeah, it's. Do you think that Gentry's job could be in jeopardy if things like don't start that well this year?
I think that they are going to play out the entire season, regardless of what ends up happening. I think one, because Drew coming back might provide a little bit of a boost. And also, Alvin is Dell's guy now. I think they're kind of like their futures are tied together in some way, just because they tried to make the leap there by moving out Monty and just changing the coach. They didn't change the roster pretty much at all. I think they re-signed five guys after that playoff run. All they did was take out a coach who had been there for a long time, had been with AD for a huge portion of his career, kind of formative years for him, and then they tried to upgrade there and it didn't work out. So I think if you're going to fire Alvin early in the season, I think it's only going to come back to hurt Dell in the long run. So at the very least, I would think that they play out the season together and go from there. But I guess you can never know.
Yeah, especially without Drew. I mean, Alvin has certainly had the injury excuses as well, but I mean, this team shouldn't have been 27th in defense last year with some of the defensive talent that they had on the team. Even if you are playing Gordon and Anderson a fair amount, that does not bode well for the coaching job that was done. But maybe they can bounce back this year, especially with some of the talent that they have. All right, we got sidetracked. Worst case scenario, real quickly, what do you see it as?
I guess it's another season like last year where the injuries just pile on them and they can't get out of there, and maybe Drew takes a little bit longer to come back, maybe Tyreek and Quincy take a little bit longer to come back, or maybe don't come back, and then, you know, AD probably gets shut down early in the season again. So it could get pretty gruesome pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to miss games, that they're going to be, especially with no Drew, it's going to be an unwinnable situation for these guys, I think. And the history has been, even if you discount the fact that he is coming off a surgery, the history has been that he's missed 20 games a season or so, at least 15. So that's going to be an issue for them. And I think, you know, you could see them down at maybe 25, 28 wins or so. Like, let's say they're the defense, even though they have this talent. I mean, they were 27th last year. So maybe just the coaching isn't that good, or, you know, Heald just isn't ready and they have to play him or whatever. I mean, you could see this maybe being like the 20th best defense potentially, just because that's what the history has been in New Orleans. And then I think the offense could very easily be in the 20s as well. And if you're in the 20s on both ends, that, you know, that could be a 25 win team. And it is really, the more I think about it, a pretty incredible range for these guys, especially because they have so many health questions. But also, I don't know. I think they have the chance to be really good on defense, but I just don't know whether all the pieces are going to fit together that well.
Yeah, and they've never risen out of the bottom third of the league in defense since Anthony Davis has been there, which is pretty surprising, considering, you know, his hype coming out of college and just how he's able to impact that end. I think the long term,
and maybe the problem was just, you know, Gordon and Anderson and Tyreek Evans. Like, maybe that's what the problem was, and now they're going to be good. And just having a bunch of replacement level guys last year, maybe they'll be good now. But on the other hand, maybe AD, despite all of his talent, just isn't that great on defense. He doesn't try hard enough. He doesn't have the awareness. That his performance 2 years ago would belie that, but in large part, he hasn't lived up to his potential yet, and now is when he's going to need to do that.
Yeah, and which is why I think this team is so interesting this year. In addition to maybe all the palace intrigue that goes on around here with the Saints and all that, it is a prove-it season for a lot of their principals.
Is the Smoothie King Center really a palace? Can we pick, like... less impressive building to talk about? Like, could it just be like, you know, kind of like the two-story brick house intrigue, or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, it's the Big Blender, man. I'm only calling it the Big Blender from now on. Someone told me that. I love it.
Someone had a sign that was like written on like cardboard with like, you know, charcoal that they brought into that preseason game that said defend the blend.
I love it. I need more of that. It's so unique. Like, if this was happening with the Lakers, this would be on the front page of ESPN literally every day of the year, based on like
all the different things happening with the Lakers too. But it is on the front page. But yeah, no, I see what you mean. I mean, it's really and just the drama of that trial with Tom Benson and his adopted daughter Rita LeBlanc and his wife. There's been a lot of drama there for sure. That it, just because it's the Pelicans, hasn't really gotten that much into the NBA consciousness, but at the very least, you'd have to say that this is a team that has one of the most unsettled management situations in the NBA.
Yeah, and I think this is a big season for all of them. I think for Anthony Davis, it's big, and, you know, he's really embraced it in the early going, saying, you know, I think in light of all the injuries that he's had, I think the shine is kind of officially off him, and I think he seems pretty motivated in order to get back to that station that he was in going into last season, where he was the next big thing in the league, because I think he does feel like and aspire to be one of the best players in the NBA and one of the best players to ever play. And then you look on the management side, where I think Dell Demps is maybe, you know, on a short leash here. You know, I think he made some moves that, like we said, make a lot of sense. But I think there is still an incentive to win now, considering some of the business aspects of this team. You know, they've had trouble drawing and being kind of a factor here in the local market and obviously nationally. And I think with Alvin Gentry, I mean, I always give him an incomplete based on last season, just because he never had the team that he thought he would have, just because Quincy was such a big part of it and Quincy didn't play at all. And now you have a team that's really been constructed in order to fit his specific style. And if they can't really bounce back that way, I think you're looking looking at, you know, maybe Alvin isn't the right guy for this team.
Yeah, if they could get, in the best case scenario, they could actually get Kupon back and he could get somewhere close to where he was in 14-15. Like, that would just be such a boon for this team as well. If he could be a guy who just plays decent defense and hits 35-36% of his threes and is just another option on the wing, I think that would really help a lot also. But with AD, you know, maybe there's the possibility anytime you have a knee surgery, you miss 5-6 months of basketball activities, maybe he's the 15th best player in the league now instead of a top 7 player in the league. And that's something that, until I think he'll get back to being where he was, this was not like a major reconstructive surgery, but you're always a little bit wary when someone has a knee surgery beyond just a very small meniscus trim about, hey, is this guy really gonna be the same? All right, I've kept you for way too long here. You want to give me your official predicted record for the season?
Oof. I think the initial line that came out was like 36.5. I'm gonna go just like slightly over and say 37. I think that, you know, while this team has some optimism going forward, I do think the Drew injury is gonna set them back to start with, and then they're probably gonna play a little bit better toward the back end, but not necessarily be able to get right in there into playoff contention.
Yeah. The line went up from 36 to 37 by the time I did my over-under pod last week. And so I tentatively picked the over. So I guess that locks me in to picking 38. I don't like it. I wish I were at 36 or 37. So, but congratulations. You're one of maybe, I think Ethan was the only other person, team expert, to pick a lower win total than I did. So maybe you're on the right side of history here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm nothing if not a cynic. So.
All right, man, where can we follow your work? Let us know what you've been working on.
Yeah, just on ESPN, and then on Twitter, I guess, just my name, Justin Verrier.
Yeah. Oh, can we give potential visitors to New Orleans a good New Orleans restaurant recommendation? Like, how have you been? You find anything good since you moved down there?
Oh, yeah. Everything is amazing. And the story I always tell, just to derail this podcast even more, is that there's a place called like New York Pizza on Magazine Street where I live. And I made a joke like, ha ha ha, that's, you know, what a generic place. And someone was like, oh yeah, the place is really good. For specifics, Shaya is kind of the big one here now.
It's, yeah, I went there on last Wednesday. That was unbelievable, that place. Like,
oh yeah, I've only been once, but if you can get in, like, get in there every time.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like you could just like go eat at the bar or something. If you have like a small group, that might. It looks like that was kind of open when I was there on a Wednesday. But yeah, that was probably. I mean, I took this 3.5 week trip. I was in Barcelona and Lisbon and London, and that meal was probably the best meal that I had on the whole trip. It's like a very like modernized take on Israeli/Middle Eastern food with some Creole elements as well. Just really outstanding cuisine. My sister works in Chicago, and so she was able to at a place that did like an event with them, and her chef knows them, and so they set us up really, really well there. I definitely recommend going there if you're in New Orleans, for sure.
Going from Barcelona to the Pacers Pelicans preseason game. That's quite a jump there.
All right. On that note, let's wrap things up here. Nate Duncan NBA is where you follow me on Twitter. And thanks to everyone who's been giving us reviews on iTunes or even a simple rating, which takes probably 30 seconds, but something that we really appreciate. It helps us grow the pod. And we'll be back soon with more season outlooks. Thanks to Justin for coming on. We'll talk to you all soon. So if you'd like to manage your money a bit more like the Hawks or the Warriors, and perhaps less like some of the less frugal teams that we've seen, you should consider Betterment. Betterment is a great way to go. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They are the largest independent automated investing service out there. One of the great products they have is Smart Deposit. If you're someone who has a variable income, what it can do is take money out of your account once you get above a certain preset limit. So if you feel like you need to have $5,000 in your account just to be safe, anytime your balance goes above $5,000, you can set it so that it'll invest that money for you automatically. That's just one of the smart services that they have. And Betterment is at a lower cost than more traditional financial services. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. Again, you can get started with them and in saving for your retirement or other financial goals with 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better.